Good evening, everyone. Here we are. This is the Hoax Busters Live. It's Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're here, then you got it right. All right. So hopefully we are going to have a good show tonight. We don't know. You know, one thing about doing the show, we don't know what to expect with the show, just to let you know. Okay. So it's kind of like a free for all. What happens, who comes in, what goes on. But we do have a protocol and what we start off with. Okay. First of all, we want to thank Speak Free Radio for actually, hosting us on the show. And of course, we're going to get at the break. We'll talk about some of their books and the things they do and all this and that. And, Diane starts off. We always start off with a review of a book. Last time when Joe was around, he reviewed, E. Michael Jones's book. And of course, everybody makes fun of me because I don't read. And, you know, anyway, we went through that whole book. You know, the only thing, the only chapter we didn't cover, it's because Joe died, was the last chapter.
That's right.
Okay. And that was a chapter on Lent. Did you know that? Man.
No, yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was the chapter that we should have really.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I don't know why I didn't get that book in the books, but I didn't. That book didn't come in the books that were there.
I know it. I know it.
I don't know why, but again, Joe had a lot of books. I thought I was getting some of the books at the end that he had right there in the room he was in.
You got some.
I got some, but I didn't get E. Michael Jones's book.
No, you did not. And,
you know, so anyway. So we are moving ahead with another book, The 6 Million Factor Fiction. And Diane, what are you up to on the chapters there?
We are now in chapter 8. You'll be very happy to know, in fact, what's going to be going on for the next 2 hours because it's 62 pages in this chapter. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I've broken it down into three. It's going to be a regular segment. Just keep paying attention.
So here it is, The 6 Million Factor Fiction. This is a book you have to have in your library. You really want to have a real good understanding of the Holocaust topic. Because I got some other books behind me here.
Anyway, it's chapter 8, Auschwitz. We'll be talking about Auschwitz for the next 3 weeks.
Okay, so we're going to be bringing up the points. I have something to chapter that I
won't.
I don't like sitting here listening to someone read something for 15 minutes. I like.
Well, we listen to you talk for 15 minutes.
You know, can you mute Diane right here? Can we mute Diane right now because she's really getting out of hand? I really don't like what she's doing right now. So okay. So anyway, we're gonna give you your chance right now, Miss Diane, to go over the book. If I do have something to say, I'm going to chime in. So don't.
Okay,
worry.
Then I get extra time, unlike at the city council meetings.
Oh man,
to extend it. Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Almost feel like we should pray. You know, like we do in the Bible study. So
yeah, right.
Okay, Auschwitz founded as a POW camp for Polish soldiers in 1940. That was the original purpose. Media coverage has ensured that Auschwitz has become central to the entire Holocaust narrative concerning mass gassings, and the camp has emerged as the embodiment of the Holocaust. The first camp at Auschwitz was named Auschwitz I and was established as a POW camp for 10,000 Polish soldiers captured during the 1939 campaign. I guess you got to put them somewhere, and they are in Poland. Captain Rudolf Huss was dispatched to Auschwitz to inaugurate the camp in April 1940. Within a month, he had transformed a collection of deteriorating former barracks situated around a vast square used for horse training into a functional prison camp. This camp that displays the infamous Arbeit macht frei, labor is freedom, or I interpret it as work makes you free. Has evolved into a symbol for the Holocaust. Also should be one for get off your ass and do something. Pardon my Chris. Okay. Phone's ringing. I'm not going to answer it.
It's going to go on the answer machine.
Good. Auschwitz was chosen as a principal industrial location for a sizable IG Farben center and an oil from coal Buna rubber plant factory. Labor for these industries was procured from the inmate population, the Polish inmates, and before long, Hirsch oversaw a camp population exceeding 30,000.
Hey, Jim, it's Babbo. I didn't get your Hoax Busters link. I'm checking my email and I can't find it. Can you try and send me another one if you haven't done so already?
You want to send a link to Barbara? I thought I had.
I'm looking at your name, Diane's name, Hulkbusters, Diana Claus. I'm looking at everybody and I don't see any link for it. Please send it to me so I can watch you guys tonight.
The enlargement of the camp posed additional challenges for Hess's administration, especially the task of controlling disease among the burgeoning inmate population. Following the invasion of the Soviet Union, multitudes of captured Russian soldiers were transported to Auschwitz to labor in the factories. As the mortality rate increased among the inmate population, Hess commissioned the construction of a crematorium in Auschwitz I, subsequently known as Crema I. It is pertinent to mention that nearly all German camps were outfitted with crematory. That's because that was a method of body disposal in Europe, for Pete's sakes.
Right, but not all camps had crematory.
Well, that's interesting. They would have had
not all of them. Not all of them. Okay.
They would, okay, that's probably Barbara. The layout, and they have tons of pictures of the maps of Auschwitz and the layout. The Auschwitz I gas chamber, crematorium in Auschwitz, was crafted from an old munition storehouse and became operational in August 1940. Allegedly, in August 1941, this crematorium's morgue was repurposed into a temporary gas chamber, quote-unquote, where experimental gassings were conducted until July 1943. This is what was claimed. Thereafter, it is asserted the gassings transitioned to a subsidiary camp situated in nearby Birkenau. The gas chamber in Auschwitz I, according to the Holocaust storytellers, was subsequently transformed into an air raid bunker, which it either was a shower. There are other purpose for it, air raid bunker.
And well, so it wasn't a shower. There was never a shower.
Right, right. I understand. That's why I stopped it. But okay. Understandably, it also was not a gas chamber, temporary or otherwise.
Right.
That you've probably seen the pictures of 1945 photograph of the Auschwitz I camp at when it was captured, the gas chamber. Note the absence of the chimney. And then repurposed and reinvented was a picture that had the chimney near it, but not attached. The okay. large chimney, which dominates the gas chamber, stands by itself a short way from the building. It's not even connected to the ovens or display inside. I think they had a Peter Winters had a kind of humorous moment when he was talking about the gas chambers being, right next to the crematory. And Jim has talked about that, it wasn't as flammable, basically, as they thought. But at the time, they thought it was. So putting something flammable next to a fire source, that was a really good idea. That sounds more like something the Soviets would have done.
Well, it was flammable if it got up to a certain proportion
right.
of Zyklon B in the room, which you never could do. Okay, but, it could do it if they really did it, but they never did it. So whatever.
No, right. That wasn't the purpose, nor the experimental. They weren't interested in exterminating people. Okay, some specific discrepancies regarding the so-called gas chambers. What they allege to be the gas chamber has two non-airtight doors, which would have resulted in the deaths of anyone standing around the building had it been used to gas people. And then another one. One of the gas chamber doors leads directly into the room, which contains the two reconstructed ovens. Gas from the gas chamber would have leaked or been heated from the crematorium would have exploded, making the entire complex unusable as a place of execution as it was building up. And I suspect they're talking about a buildup.
Well, it could never build up like that. Believe me.
Well, if you had leaking, constant leaking, or it was funneling into the crematory.
Diane, it could never blow
that's,
up. Like
that's
that.
What I happens mean, when you just, talk to someone like
just let you know, it would have to be under pressure, a lot of pressure going into that crematory, which there was no way you could pressurize the room. So, that it could
but
be.
But they didn't know that then. They didn't know that then. You think they did? The Germans may have.
All right, move on.
Maybe. Okay. The openings in the roof, that was something we've talked about. Professor Forreson said, no holes, no holocaust, and he investigated the openings in the roof for the introduction of cyanide gas, quote-unquote, are crude wooden flap boxes of flimsy build, which are also not airtight. The use of these holes to introduce poison gas into the chamber below would have resulted in the death of the guards and of the people in the surrounding buildings as the gas chamber is in the middle of the very built-up part of Auschwitz I. And despite these inconsistencies, they still throw these at us as the Holocaust narrative.
Let me just say something to you, Ms. Diane. I actually have a picture mm-hmm. of the roof
yeah.
of the Auschwitz building completely flat, and there's no holes. Okay, so I have an original picture that shows that there were no holes in the roof. So right. obviously they were chipped in later.
Like Professor Forsan said.
That's right.
Right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, this farce is maintained to the present day, even at the camp itself, where visitors are still informed that this was a real gas chamber. However, they have had to admit that a lot of it, there was a lot of reconstruction after the war. And David Cole was actually got a guide to admit that, for one thing. Problem is, Auschwitz Museum finally admits that gas chamber was built after the war. Too many people were asking too many questions, and so they had to basically retract themselves and show that the tourist was actually built in 1948 by Polish communists.
We got to clarify this too. It wasn't built after the war. It was never there.
I'm talking about the rebuilt part of whatever they're trying to construct.
There was nothing rebuilt. They just chipped holes in the roof.
I'm not talking about the roof.
I know, but I want people to understand this. Everything was there. They just have reinvented it to say, this is what the room is now. In other words, here's the room that was the morgue. Now the room's a gas chamber. Nothing changed. They just called
just
it
the name.
Guess, yeah, the name just the name changed. That's all they did. And they put holes in the roof.
Too many people began, I'm going to read this part now, began asking questions. And an article in the French magazine L'Express from January 1995 proved to be a turning point. In the article, the journalist Eric Conan informed a surprise readership that the gas chamber shown to tourists was built in 1948 by Polish communists. The Auschwitz, and in fact, he wrote, everything in it is fake. That was what he had said. So already the house of cards dealing with the narrative is crumbling. The next section is the gas chambers moved to Auschwitz II. Faced with the evidence that the Auschwitz I gas chamber could easily be disproven, the Holocaust storytellers shifted their narrative and now argue that the real or most frequently used gas chambers were situated in the second camp at Auschwitz, constructed near Auschwitz I, at a location known as Birkenau or Auschwitz II. And so the crimes are committed in the now they just switched the location of the atrocity. Okay, crimes they were saying committed in the old crematorium, that is in Auschwitz I, could not have escaped the notice. Okay, that's the thing. The concentration camp inmates, some of whom were at the time released. Now, that's something we didn't know. A lot of the people in the camp were released after a period of time. They would have known if there was something. They weren't talking about anything about gas chambers or executions like that.
Right.
As well as civilians passing on the nearby Osvikum to Brzezik Road. Now, this is undeniably accurate. It would have been unfeasible to gas thousands or even hundreds of individuals in the Auschwitz I gas chamber without drawing the attention of the entire camp and the broader public, considering that the purported gas chamber was purportedly positioned conspicuously outside the main entrance and was visible to everyone. Boom. Okay.
Are you done?
No. Oh, are you kidding? I was somewhat interrupted, if you recall.
Well, no, I just didn't know how more you're going to be talking, but that's
okay. Well, you just hang on, just buckle up.
Well, listen, I got to go. I'll see you in a
minute. Yeah, I'll see you. Let us know when you're back. Mute yourself. okay, in 2006, the official Auschwitz Museum website finally acknowledged that the gas chamber displayed to visitors for decades had been reconstructed. Created. Fake. Nonsense.
Just renamed.
That's right.
I was always there. I mean, everything
changed the name to protect the guilty.
Yeah.
In 2021, the official Auschwitz Museum website asserted that the Auschwitz I gas chamber was inappropriate for use because its activities would not have escaped the notice of everyone, which I already talked about, the people in the town, the people in the camp. And so they realized the full implications, had to change the location, the admission implications of admission to the world, that they ordered the removal of all such references from the museum website. Now it's and Joe mentioned that actually, that Auschwitz I was kind of key to this. And so now that it's Auschwitz II. The new gas chambers at Auschwitz II and Birkenau crematoria. The Auschwitz II Birkenau camp was originally constructed to house Russian POWs who worked as laborers in the industrial complex Auschwitz-Monowitz, where the hydrocarbon factory was located. Here is claim no fewer than four large gas chambers were built as part of the building complex and began operations in March 1943. Holocaust storytellers claim that two of the gas chambers, the crematorium 2 and 3, located underground next to the house and the ovens, while the other two at crematorium 4 and 5 were situated above ground. However, the architect's plan showed no gas chambers, so we got a slight flaw at Auschwitz 2. The narrative that the original German architectural building plans for the four large crematoria at Auschwitz 2 have survived and are on display at the camp museum today, so you can see the blueprints. This is unfortunate for the Holocaust storytellers because these architectural plans do not show any details of gas chambers at all. They only show morgues. There's not a single German architectural plan or design for gas chambers. Don't you hate it when that happens? The Holocaust storytellers claim of mass gassings and converted underground mortuaries. So they assert now that the Germans only considered using underground mortuaries after their construction. And then, of course, the absurdity and impossibility of underground mass gassings. I mean, the idea at all. According to the Holocaust storytellers, once 2,000 Jews were in the underground gas chambers, Zyklon B pellets would be dropped into square metal containers lined with mesh. Contact with the air would cause these pellets to release cyanide gas, which would kill the people in the room. The duration this allegedly took varies depending on which version of the story one subscribes. What is, Jim, the problem with air hitting cyanide gas in metal mesh containers?
Huh? Are you asking me a question?
Yes, based on, it's obvious, when they talk about Zyklon B pellets, contact with the air is going to produce poisonous gas, killing off people in, 15 minutes? What's the problem with that?
Well, they even say less time than that. So yeah. Some people say in five minutes, mm-hmm. 10 minutes, 2,000 people being aghast with these pellets. First of all, the columns, which again, the columns, they kind of mm-hmm. like added to the story later on.
Yes.
Because they knew when they were saying what happened in the beginning, they were throwing the pellets on people's heads and they were just falling all over the ground. Well, they knew that people would just be kicking them around, getting them out of the way. So then they devised the story that they had to have a column that all of them fell into a foot square type of column.
Well, so what happens when it hits the air?
Well, it would off gas. It's supposed to gas.
I thought it only happened if it was hot and there was a fan.
No, I know. We get it. But the point is, they keep screwing the story up because now they're telling you that it's coming down into just a foot square thereabouts, mm-hmm. right, area, which would mean they would be all piled up on top of each other.
Right. That's right.
That's right. And how the hell could they, how could they off gas the pellets if they were all on top of each other? Couldn't happen.
One lump of coal. And so people likely would run away. Oh, wait a minute. They're not supposed to be able. They're so packed in. Okay. That's another problem, isn't there? If they're so packed in, to the degree that they're saying you cannot get circulation through these pellets to help them off gas. That's right.
The story is full of gas.
Doesn't have any substance to it.
If they were put in a room, it was about 1,800 square feet. And if you had 2,000 people in a room of 1,800 square feet, they would have died of asphyxiation with no air. They would have been asphyxiated with no air. Okay,
but they weren't airtight. The room wasn't airtight, so they got plenty of oxygen.
The story is so silly, but they just keep adding stuff to it to make it work, and it can't make it work. There's no way to make it work.
It doesn't work. Subsequently, furthermore, the gas would need to be extracted from the room by some means. In some narratives, this detail is entirely skipped. And then Sonderkommando Jews would enter the room with or without gas masks. Again, dependent on the narrative version, extract the piled bodies and retrieve gold teeth from their skulls. That sounds like a Jewish thing. They would then load the bodies onto an elevator to transport the corpses to the ground floor where they would be cremated. And of course, the next paragraph, the challenges inherent in such a process are so significant that it's simply stated impossible. Okay, and this is really worth it. Like Jim was saying, first, the cramped conditions in the underground mortuaries make managing a crowd of 2,000 people virtually impossible. Forcing such a massive crowd into two sequential underground chambers would be an almost insurmountable task. The guards would have to be present, and even if they could control such a vast crowd, directing them all into a small gassing room beneath an active crematorium would be a monumental task that would take hours. Recall that the Holocaust storytellers assert this procedure would occur multiple times daily. Even if they managed to fit 2,000 people into an underground room without resistance and succeeding in gassing them as described, removing the bodies would be a more challenging task than ushering the living individuals into the room. And the reason would be because I think there was only one door. Okay. The Holocaust storytellers maintained that the bodies would pile up due to their struggle. Oh, this is going to be fun. You're going to love this. Speaking of the flood of gas, due to their struggles and untangling them would necessitate an extended, tedious process that would also last hours. Additionally, as is widely recognized, approximately 80% of people who perish from organophosphate poisoning evacuate their bowels upon death. This indicates that the underground chamber, which lacked a comprehensive drainage or cleaning system, would rapidly become inundated with human feces. In fact, after just one mass gassing of 2,000 individuals, the chamber would be thoroughly saturated with human feces. Upon opening the airtight single door, the feces would spill into the adjacent room as well, rendering the entire underground facility unusable. The matter of the single door into the gas chamber was another thing. Okay, let me buy. I'll get the next body. Yeah, just slipping and sliding. Yeah, that's going to happen. And then the hoist that's supposed to take that the most two bodies at a time, it would take hours to hoist 2,000 bodies. And if you're doing the numbers, if they're maintaining, let's say the numbers were correct. They're not. But if they were 2,000 bodies a day, you'd be backing up. And I'm not talking about diarrhea. I'm talking about more diarrhea than constipation, just so you know. So anyway, so there's one standardized door for both ingress and egress. Rooming thousands of corpses would take hours, even if they were not piled on top of one another with human shit. Pardon the expression. Lastly, if this were not already problematic enough, the subterranean corpse elevator, which did exist, as depicted on the architectural blueprints, was designed to transport two bodies at a time from the underground mortuary to the crematory. It would take all day to accomplish that. And boom, I'm done with that section.
The thing is, there's so much wrong with this.
Oh, my gosh.
The thing is, nobody will talk to me or have a debate with me about this, because it's just logical that it couldn't happen. And again, getting back to that room, it was only 1,800 square feet and only one door, one door to get into the room. And that was the door that the people had to go in to get into the room, okay, to line up, military style line up, shoulder to shoulder, all the way, because they'd have to start in the back and work their way to the door. That would take you half a day just to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then everybody dying in the room. It's just ridiculous. It's just complete nonsense. It would take over a week to get this done if that was
the goal. Don't you think the Germans could have come up with something more? If they're the brightest bulbs on the planet, they could have come with something way more organized. This sounds like something the Soviets would do, to be honest with you, if they were interested in exterminating.
Well, first of all, it couldn't be done. You couldn't do this. Okay. You couldn't do what they said happened. And everybody has a story of how it happened. And that was just with 2,000 people in the room. Dario Gibai, he said there was 2,500 to 3,000 people that would probably in the room. So the story is just, it's so off the wall, and you can't talk to anybody about it because they have it in their own mind. It's set how it happened. So, okay, that's that. So next week.
We'll go and continue with Auschwitz. The point is, it's important to learn the details that bring down their house of cards. Just a few of these details makes the whole narrative void.
Yeah. Well, it's just people just believe what people tell them, and no one ever just sits back to say, is this possible? That's what the revisionists have done. Yeah. And they've had to revise their story too, but the problem is they can't. And so they just invent more nonsense to go along with nonsense.
They go, nobody will notice. And so
that's how they look at it. They look at it like, no one's going to care. No one's going to, think about what's going on here. We're just going to tell them what we think, what we say happened here, what the people say happened here. And that's it. Story, case closed. 6 million Jews killed in gas chambers.
Right.
That's, you know what it is? You know what it is, guys? They use the atrocity to cover up the lack of logic in the entire endeavor.
Right.
It's all about, it was so horrible. Oh, you couldn't believe what's going on. You know, right. and that covers up the fact that they have no facts whatsoever.
And also a lot of people said there wasn't anything going on. What are you talking about? Like a Paul Rosine. That's what he was saying.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't in Auschwitz, but he was.
No, I understand. But the reporting, because it's all part of the same narrative. Like reporting, he debunked it. He got in a lot of trouble for somebody who was not a fan of the National Socialists. He was actually supporting them.
Right, right.
Eventually.
Okay. We're done with that topic. We always got to get rid of that topic in the beginning.
Yeah.
And Diane did a good job bringing those points up.
Well, it was very, very amusing.
Yeah. Well, next week we're continuing on in the book. So that's what we're going to be doing. Okay. Now we're going to bring in Henry.
Henry.
Hi, Henry. How you doing?
Good evening to everybody.
How's everybody? Good to have you back. Good to have you back, because hopefully you can give us an update, because you've been away and traveling on. I know I like to hear what you have to say about your little trip to California and the IHR.
IHR conference.
What happened over there. So if you can enlighten us, we'd like to hear.
Yeah, I was enthused that Mark Weber, whom I respect, invited me to speak at the IHR gatherings. And he wanted mostly to hear about how I became to protest. He was interested in hearing about the court case that was conducted against us protesting here in Ann Arbor. For those who don't know, we have been protesting in front of a Zionist synagogue for over 20 years, every Saturday morning, being an anti-Israel. We wish the state of Israel would go away. We wish the Jewish supremacists would mind their own business and not infiltrate my country, the United States, and tell us what to do. We're given a black eye in the rest of the world because we support this racist entity called the Jewish state, and so when the Jews in the United States exercise their power, it's very considerable. Our Congress is totally bought and sold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the quote United States acts in ways that are against the interests of the United States, but no one's standing up and talking about it. I don't know how many people are listening to this show, but there's like five of us here or six of us. And, I spoke at the IHR, wasn't a conference. It was just a meeting, evening meeting, a gathering.
Can you tell us like where you met, did you meet in his office? A building? Did you meet in a hotel? What's the situation?
His office is fronts a bit of a warehouse building. A lot of buildings in that area were flat. We could hear the airplanes going over.
Yeah, it's near the airport. Yeah,
and so it's somewhere in Santa Ana, and I couldn't get us back there. It wasn't like I was blindfolded and taken there, but he's had his offices pipe bombed and fire bombed.
That was years ago.
That's been a long time.
He doesn't have to worry about that now. How many people were at the meeting?
I'd say 25. Margo, 25?
I'd say, yeah. say 30 to 35.
Margo says 30 to 35.
Okay.
So I just spoke and I told my story about, you know, growing up in a Jewish household, having some man tell me that Israel was the fourth mightiest military in the world. And I told him he was full of it and he didn't care what I thought. And I checked and sure enough, Israel was the fourth mightiest military.
Yeah, that's what I learned too. Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, it's the same stream. I remember making a video for the Committee on Open Debate on the Holocaust. Saying why what brought me to this to Holocaust revisionism, and it's being lied to, and my reaction to being lied to, my personal reaction to being lied to is I don't like it, and I want to find out what's going on, to find the truth out, and I think that's a reasonable expectation of people, but you don't get it, you know. Mm-hmm. Diane, when you were reading. I jotted down a meeting with my friend Molly. Molly is a lady that comes in and rides on the back of her husband's motorcycle, and we ride around the country. She's in Delaware, and I'm here in Michigan, and we meet. And we met in September last year, and we had a conversation, and it went like somehow the topic of gas chambers came up, and I said, there were no gas chambers in Auschwitz, and she said, I was there. I stood in the gas chamber, Henry, and I said, you stood in a post-war reconstruction, and she said, this conversation's over. That's what we're up against. How could I ever get her to read this book, The 6 Million? How could I ever get her to read anything?
Yes.
There you go.
Finished. There you are talking to these people, and we taped it, and you put it on YouTube, and...
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to that. I'm being coached here.
reminded.
Yeah, I mean, Margo is still rightfully outraged that I could show you this video of me speaking to the IHR group. I put it on YouTube, and two days later...
Get that link to me, and I'll put that up on my site today.
All right. Tonight. Well, how do I link it to you?
You don't have to. Give him the URL.
Just give me the URL. I'll download it and everything. But you already have it. It's on YouTube, right?
No. It's,
no.
Oh. That's the point. The YouTube channel's gone. You try to...
That's what I thought.
You don't see anything.
Okay. So you don't even have the video up. You just have the video.
I have it on my cloud, whatever that, you know, that is.
I'm not sure how to navigate that.
I'll join, you know, one of my tasks. And we just came back. And, of course, Amtrak. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's ridden the rails in this
not
country.
Ages.
But it's a
ages.
Sorry state of affairs. We were 6.5 hours late.
That was actually early. So
we missed the connection to Michigan. Right. But of course they understand that and they're prepared for this. So they put us all up. Must have been 50 of us. They put us up in a swanky hotel in downtown Chicago. Unfortunately, we had to get up at 5:30 in the morning to catch the early train to Michigan. So we missed the enjoyment of spending a night in a hotel. We were there for 4 hours or something like that. I don't mean to be crying on anybody's shoulder here.
It is interesting.
It's very frustrating. You guys know the name of Robert Bowers? He's the guy that shot up the synagogue in Pittsburgh in 2018.
Allegedly.
Yeah. And, I assume, and I have an open mind, and if that was a false flag, I'd like to know more about it, but.
I assume it is until they prove otherwise.
I'll take it straight up, and he's going to get the death penalty. But nobody has asked him why he did it.
Really?
And I think one of the reasons was he was cut off on all his social networking platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, and from experience now, that's a very bitter pill to swallow. I mean, I have videos of my cat who just passed away a month ago, you know, and so my whole thing is taken down. What is this? You know, who's controlling this stuff?
That's right.
So the guy gets a little nutso, and he goes into a synagogue and open fires. I mean, it's a terrible thing to do.
Excuse me.
But hold on a second. What?
We all know why he did it, because he was an anti-Semitic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. We forgot. I forgot.
Yeah, that's right. He's anti-Semitic. and that's why we protested synagogues, and I started the whole thing, just because I hate Jews. You know, there's no other reason. Anti-Semitism confounds the Jews. They can't understand. You know, here the Jewish state is creating just tragedy after tragedy, yeah, as they pummel Palestine into the rubble. They're killing babies. They're killing infants. And they make up all this stuff that they do, and then they blame other people for doing it. And that's the whole circle. We're coming back to the past of the Holocaust, which is, you know, the same lies they spun then, they're spinning now, you know, accusing Hamas of doing the same things that they themselves do. They're the ones that are using hostages as shields. They're the ones that are torturing. They're the ones that are raping, and they blame it on Hamas. It was the same thing. They're blaming it on the National Socialists, you know, for the things that they themselves do.
That's true. That's true.
So I talked about how I came to be who I am and do what I do. But that spurred two other meetings that I was able to participate in and talk at. And that was, some of it was, I guess, a little interesting. There was, you know, 20 people at one meeting and maybe 30 at the other. But we're, you know, again, we're so small in numbers. And when we meet people like my friend Molly, who absolutely cannot hear any argument, it's a very difficult thing. And now we have what the Holocaust movies are still being churned out. There's one about Rudolf Hess and his family outside the concentration camp, and all the dark images or whatever. And the I think there's going to be now a TV series.
Oh my god!
It's starting about some other topic, you know, and it's just, it's 24/7, so you really can't blame Molly for being so, you know, but she can't claim that she's open minded. I mean, that's the, you know, that to me is really difficult.
Here's the problem, okay? It's a problem when somebody is there and they tell them this is the room that this happened in, and now they're in the room, so they're. They're just, I'm in the room that was the gas chamber. Well, Molly, that wasn't a gas chamber.
First of all,
it's hard for Molly, because of her cognitive dissonance, to understand that it wasn't a gas chamber, because they're telling her it was a gas chamber. And there were no gas chambers, Molly. If you want to see a real gas chamber, do a search on American gas chambers, and you're going to see a real gas chamber. Were you in a room like that? Okay, if you were in a room that was a real gas chamber in the United States, then I can say, all right, fine, but you weren't. You were in a room that looked like they brought cars in and did oil changes. I mean, that's all about what that room was. So it's ridiculous. But anyway, go ahead.
You know, it's just really impossible. When a friend says the conversation's over, it's kind of over. You know, I'll keep it in mind, of course, and the next time I approach her, I'll ask her if she wants to continue the conversation. But she'll probably say, no, I don't. You know, she doesn't want to hear it. There were people at these meetings that I attended that thought, you know, for Palestine. And that's, you know, that's my bread and butter. That's how I came into this. Yeah. This guy's claim was, well, there's so much evidence against Israel right now. Why even muck around with the Holocaust? And it's, you know, it's like I want to say to him, look, when they give it up, I'll give it up. But they don't give it up.
Right.
You know, there's like 12, 14 hits a day. And you were the one that taught me how to do that, Jim. Put up a Google alert on the word Holocaust. And you get, 12, 14 hits a day. Yeah, movies are coming out. TV series are coming out. And I even said that in my speech, that Mark Weber and I have a differing opinion. He thinks that the influence on the Holocaust is waning, and I say it's ramping up. for every crime that Israel commits, the Jewish state commits, you know, they have to ramp because that's their ace in the hole. They don't, no other community, no other ethnic group, no other state could do the crimes that Israel's doing against Palestinians if it weren't for the Holocaust, in my opinion. And also, of course, with the power that the Jews have to silence stories and the American people, you know, all they want to do is, and I'm somewhat guilty on this, is watch the NCAA basketball tournament because clearly sports are the opiate of the masses, and that's what people know. And like I was saying earlier, there's six of us here. There's six or seven of us that meet on Wednesdays in England through Zoom. Hang on a second. And I remember from 10 years ago when a neighboring college, Michigan State, was going to play in the NCAA championship game. They drew 25,000 people to watch them practice, you know, and so it's like, we're really at the margins of the margins here. And so I don't know exactly how to do what we do, but there was an incident that happened today. Hold on a second there.
But we hung out with at least 50 different people who we could actually talk to.
Margo's saying
so amazing
that we had 50 people and it was like, we can't get 50 people here in Michigan.
But we could talk about everything.
So we talked about all sorts of stuff, about
the 9/11 protests.
This is my interview here, okay?
Hey, Margo, why don't you come on? Get your face in here. Margo, come on out. We want to see you. Hi, Margo.
Side of it. We were actually in two or three separate rooms with 50 other people who we could talk totally openly with, and they would talk back. They were so aware. They knew everything. And you'd love to talk to any of these
people. That is.
And we met these guys that had been holding a 9/11 protest for 20 years at the Midway, which is parked down there in Coronado, I think. I don't know where it is from, but in San Diego.
All right.
And they were doing what Henry was doing, only about, it was about truth and Jewish power.
Well, they quit. I haven't quit yet.
You haven't quit yet.
No. And today, it was interesting because the we were standing at our usual positions, and an Ann Arbor police car came very slowly up the drive and was taking, it looked like he was taking photographs of our signs. And we're wondering if they're not, you know, I think they're very irritated at our Holocaust signs. Our signs that say 6 million, really, and gas chambers, really. I think they are, they called the cops. The cops came by. They went into the parking lot. They spoke to the security guard about what, I really don't know. And so we're just going to have to wait and see. My buddy says I should call the city and see what was going on Monday, but I'll wait until they come to me. If they have something to say, they should say it. And the people there that know, you know, the security guys, I waved to them this morning and they waved back. I mean, they know we're no biggie in terms of threats, physical threats. It's really absurd. But this is how the whole world is ginned up to have sympathy for the Jews. And the Jews are always the victims and they're never the perpetrators. And they hold their heads. I mean, I'm reading these things about people that say, oh, the worm has turned. That was one of the last sentence in an article I read that some guy said that the poor victims of the National Socialists are now the victimizers of Palestinians. Right. And it's just like, isn't it more logical to conclude or to assume that the Jews were the aggressors in Europe, in Germany in particular, and they are the aggressors in Palestine?
Right.
I mean, to me, there's no surprise then. That's a level, a continuum But to say, you know, the former victims are now the victimizers, that to me doesn't make that doesn't make any sense. How you could do that? And I just think that you know, people need to get the horse in front of the cart. I mean, we've already bought into this. You know, we're the revisionists and we have to prove something. No, if they're making allegations on gas chambers, prove it. Right. Show me, show Jim, show Diane what's, you know, what and where and how, and show us the blueprints, Miss Deborah Lipstadt, and show us the photographs. You know, they can't produce anything, but people have been so inundated, so dipped into the Kool-Aid, that they have they've drunk enough to float a battleship. Right. But I don't mean to be fired up tonight. I just, we're still recovering from the train trip that put us off kilter a little bit. But
okay, Henry, I want to get into your meeting. This very interests me because you seem like you had a problem with Mark Weber, because Mark Weber does not want to talk about the Holocaust. He thinks it's irrelevant.
Yeah. He doesn't think it's irrelevant. He thinks it has less relevance than it did in the 80s and 90s.
Okay, so what does he think is relevant?
Yeah, doesn't seem to be a warm, cuddly guy like you are, Jim. You know, I mean, I feel I've known you for a lot longer than I have.
I'm warm and cuddly to some people, but a lot of people are going to think I'm a bear.
I join you in that. I mean, if you lived in Ann Arbor, you would be the most hated man in Ann Arbor.
Yeah,
unfortunately, you don't. So I am. You know, that's how it plays out. I'll be on Rumble. Mark did give a speech before me, and he called out the Jews something fierce.
I get no problem with that. My problem is he doesn't get into the Holocaust, and that's the thing he should be pushing, and that's my problem with him. And I got a problem with Mark Weber. I mean, he's not a true blue revisionist. He's semi revisionist, and that's fine if he wants to be that. But I'm just wondering, like, even the people that came to his meeting, what's their thinking? What are they thinking that, you know, I don't know. He seems like, to me, he's too much into the political, social stuff of the world without really getting into the topic that, to me, is the most important topic with the Jews. Anyway, that's my opinion.
Well, I thought, too, that he cut his teeth, as his bread and butter was the Holocaust. You know, and now he appears to be backing off. I have no clue as to why. I asked another couple of people about that, and they didn't have any idea. I'm not even sure what fills his days, but he's a really busy guy. And, he's a genuine scholar, and I'm not a scholar.
Well, I don't know what he's busy doing. What's he doing? Is he busy counting his money he got from the lawsuit with Willis Cato? He got millions of dollars out of that lawsuit, and I don't think he has to worry about working again.
I don't know. He, just like I said, Jim, he seemed to be a decent man, and he was putting me on a pedestal, on a stage. So I thank them for that, and that's all we can ask, is that we don't silence one another. I think that's important. Now, if he's gonna badmouth you and keep you, you know.
Oh no, he won't badmouth me.
I just don't know who, you know. It seems logical or plausible that somebody at that meeting fingered me, and that's what caused my YouTube channel to. Yeah,
you get it. Then that means there's a spy in his network.
Yep, that's right. And it could have been someone I met. And it could have been someone
That's interesting.
And you know, and it shows how pathetic our opposition is, because, you know, a friend of mine put out that there's only like 200 views on my video channel, on my YouTube channel, you know, and they're so nervous they can't even allow my squeaky little voice to be heard.
Wow.
On YouTube.
That is something. I mean, to ban you is really something, because to me, you're like a neutral guy just talking about a situation. You don't go crazy like I do, but and they ban you. I just find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I can see the humor in that. I can see it. I'm a small fry. Some people take it seriously, but and I'm curious to find out what the cops were doing here today and what's happening. And I'm sure I'll find out. Maybe they were they're trying back again to, you know, having us take down the signs that we have attached to trees. Huh. That's my.
Well, yeah, they could make a law. There could be even a law that you can't put signs on trees. You know, they could do that, and then now you got to deal with their little stupid little laws. So yeah, that could happen. You have to have your own signs that stand up themselves. They can't be on poles. They can't be on trees. Yeah. They can't be on lawns. Or, you know, something like that. You know what I'm saying?
That would be treason. Yeah. Very funny. There's no end to how they can complain. But you know, I mean, it's just, you know, we put up billboards, they take billboards down. We put ads in the local magazines. And now I'm not allowed to place an ad that I'm willing to pay money for in a magazine that just says, please join us for a pro-Palestine protest every Saturday morning. You know, we can't even advertise that. And, you know, and I think frustration builds from that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about these people. I think, you know, it's going to be a bad time to be a Jew. Because people are going to take out their frustrations in other ways, and that's going to be very, very sad. I mean, if it's happening, if the incident in Pittsburgh did in fact happen, and I believe it did, and I could be proven wrong, but I believe it did right now, I think it's going to. There's going to be more of that because, you know, and then they love it because quote, anti-Semitism is rising. And, you know, and they can't even say, wait a minute, you know, Jews are bombing hospitals in Gaza. That's one of our signs that they don't like it because it says Jews bomb hospitals. It's absolutely true. It's a true statement. And they always want to cry, well, not all Jews, you know, and it's just like that always kills me because. You know, when they say, you know, Germans invaded Poland in 1939, nobody cries, not all the Germans did that. Break. I mean, you know, be consistent or get out. You know, I mean, it's just not, you know, and now people are mealy mouthing, you know, what the Jewish state is doing and can we do this? And even my Palestinian friends are getting sucked into this Jewish power thing. I mean, they love it when they see a Jewish group putting up memorials in Palestine for some of the massacres that have been done there. And I'm saying, you know, you guys aren't getting it. They have interests that are not in your interest. You Palestinian people, it's not in your interest that they're doing this. They're doing it in their interest. They're trying to sugarcoat this bitter pill called Jewish supremacy. And of course, Jews are the first people to point out white supremacy.
Right.
You know, certainly wasn't Joe Biden himself that said the greatest danger to our country is white supremacists. I mean, that pissed me off. You know, I mean, I might not be proud of being white, but I'm certainly not ashamed of it.
Right.
You know, and I think that lit up in the colors of the transgender flag.
Can you imagine that?
That's great. I mean, this is really getting sick. Even the people in San Diego, though, I was able to surprise them with Ann Arbor's wokeness, because here in Ann Arbor, in the men's room, in the library, public libraries, there are free dispensers of tampons and sanitary napkins.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
So you can go to the men's room. I could take you down. Jim, it would be a five-minute walk for me and you right here from my house. So the Westgate branch of the Ann Arbor Public Library, and I'd show you free. You can get them for free if you want. You know, want to blow your nose in a napkin. I don't know what you want to use it for.
Now, Henry, I want to talk to you about Okay, so you're off of YouTube now. So, but you put your videos up there yourself, right?
Yes.
Okay, so why can't you just get a BitChute channel and just go with BitChute now?
What you recommend BitChute over Rumble?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh Rumble, we got kicked off of Rumble.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, we got they kicked us off of Rumble because you know we tell the truth, you know. So if you want, you can. If you want to waste your time with Rumble, go ahead. But BitChute's way better. You're going to get a whole better situation, better people. Then here's what's good about BitChute. You put them on BitChute, then I can download them from your BitChute channel to my BitChute channel. Mm-hmm. So I'll get you more people to go to your channel. So yeah, that will be good. Yeah. You know.
All right, and I'll buy you a beer.
I really don't drink, but that's okay. I'll have a beer after I mow the lawn. I usually, you know, I'll have a beer then.
How often does that happen?
I don't mow the lawn anymore. So anyway, there you go. Yeah. So yeah, definitely get that BitChute channel going, and you'll see once you get your channel going, then you're going to get from my channel a lot of people coming to your channel.
So all right,
that's going to be really good.
That sounds good. Now, this Rabbi Shmuley, I don't know much about him. He's got the ear of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., right? Mm. He got the hell out of it.
I haven't been really following that, so I don't know what's going on there.
We have no...
here it is here.
If I were Rabbi Shmuley and diddle 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 diggle diggle diddle diddle bum, all day long I'd diddle little bums. If I were a Shmuley man, I'd peddle all my dildos, dreidel dildo selling dildos with my daughter and her mum. If I were a Jewish Shmuley man, I'd be digging with a dildo in my bum. I'd wear a grotesque nose and go grab some goyim right on the nipple with a pinch. A Shabbos lap dance breast for the youngest mensch. The books I'd sell would tell how all you fellas are jealous of Jewish sexual appeal. Meanwhile, I'd count the shekels that I'd steal. It's white supremacy when you are questioning me on the USS Liberty. Genocide's just fine when you're the chosen kind. I'd get a pass on calling Candace a nigger, a bigger gefilte fish to fry. I'd know why Michael Jackson had to die. Why, if I were Rabbi Shmuley, all day long I'd shalom in your home. If I were a Shmuley man, I'd go full kosher Kama Sutra and dreidel dildo tunnel digging with a dildo in my bum. Lord, who made the Gentile and the Jew? Of course he'd make me superior to you. Gleefully I'd be squealing on our scheme to remove Christ the King from everything. If I were a Shmuley man.
Yikes.
Okay, that was interesting to say the least. All right.
So I'm just going to chime in because I know that I saw the smiles wane. It's interesting because his daughter has some sort of, they have a website, like it's called Kosher Sex, which we can talk about after the break, if you're so inclined.
Do we have to?
Well, no, I mean, that, you know.
It's disgusting.
This guy's he's a good little piano player. That's for sure. Okay. Anyway, Henry, you can stay with us if you want, but we don't want to hold you up if you got something you got to do, because we're going to move on to other things. But if you want to stay and conclude, if you have more to say, we just got to do a little break with the site here. That's all. Just hang in there for a minute, okay?
Okay.
Okay, just hang in. Then, like I said, if you have more to say, say it. And then if you want to leave, then that's up to you too. Okay, so anyway, folks, we want to take a break here. It's the top of the hour, and we want to thank our sponsor, Speak Free Radio, for having us on. And we're going to actually show you where you can get the books. Mm-hmm. And this is another site, Money Tree Publishing, where a lot of the books that we talk about, Diane's talking about the 6 million factor fiction, there it is there amongst all the other things that are there too. So plenty of information to get if you want to get good books on the topics right here. Dave Gahiri tells me they're only going to carry like about 20 books or whatever. I know he says they're not going to be putting a lot of books up on the site, but the books that are there are going to be really good, the best books that you can get on the subject. And there they are right there. And I have a whole bunch of these books even here myself right now. So that's money3publishing.com. And again, folks, that's where you can get them in. Plus some good DVDs too. If you want to get the DVDs to explain a lot of the stuff here, Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, Secret Masonic Victory. These are really good DVDs that you could watch at your own leisure, even though you can get these, I think, online too. If you look around, you can find them. But if you want DVDs, you can get them here. Okay, so that's that for that. All right, let's move on, Henry. So all in all, Henry, your trip, how do you feel about it? Do you think it was worth going or whatever?
Sure, I feel it was really worthwhile to meet other people. You know, I mean, I think we're going to make a really good friend out of a man named Ray, I think his name is. Might be wrong. I think that's going to develop. I think maybe there's some more contacts. I was invited to join a chat group or an email group. Mm-hmm. And so these people were very enthused that someone was speaking out against Jewish power. Though one person, I never did get a response to him because it was just in a private discussion. But he said that one of the reasons that, you know, that I am allowed to do a synagogue protest is that I came from the Jewish community, and that, no one else is. But it doesn't, to me, it seems like you don't need to have credentials to call out Jewish power. And I think our job is to expose it, and not out of a, hopefully not out of a standpoint or a viewpoint of hatred, but of trying to understand what's going on. I mean, Diane, isn't it love the sinner, hate the sin?
No, that's not even scriptural, but that may be the good practice. But the point is, they're talking about you're coming under less recriminations because you are Jewish. If Jim and I were out there protesting the synagogue, they deal with us differently than they're dealing with you.
Yeah, I would bet that they would arrest us.
Oh, that goes, yes, I agree.
I would, there's no doubt. See, Henry, you, the fact that you're ethnically Jewish, that's kind of a very good plus for you.
It is.
You can get away with a lot of stuff we can never get away with.
That's right.
They would be there every day harassing us. The police would be harassing us.
Yeah.
People would be coming up to us, provoking us, and then accusing us of doing something bad to them or whatever. Yeah, that's what it was. They can't do that to you because they can't accuse you of being anti-Semitic.
But it doesn't hold any water.
It doesn't hold water.
Yeah. I'd love to see you try that because I think that's be an important First Amendment test.
Well, I really don't have anywhere to do that around here. But you know, it is what it is. But no, you're getting a bye because
you're ethnically
Jewish, and they know that.
And that's terrible because, you know, that in fact is using the Jewish power that I decry. I mean, that is, you know,
their interpretation, not your plan. That wasn't your plan of action. That's just how they may look at it.
Well, I think there is a First Amendment still in the United States, and I think it's got to be tested. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in terms of the person making a complaint today against my gas chamber sign. Maybe they're going to, I don't see how I can be tried twice, but for the same crime. I thought I should be constitutionally protected against that. But yeah, I have to nod and say, you know, maybe so, but there are other ways other than standing in front of a synagogue to expose Jewish power. And we have
well, that's the heart of the matter. Other than going to a Holocaust Memorial Museum, that is really the heart of the matter.
Yeah, well, we could, you know, maybe you could protest in front of one of your local hoax museums. We don't have any.
Yeah, we have one in Houston or Dallas.
We're kind of like far away. Well, I mean, we're 2 or 3 hours away from everybody. But well, my protesting days are over, Henry. Let me just tell you that, okay? I've done enough protesting and you know, getting attacked and having all these fun things happen. And, you know, I'm 71, and it's
You're a young man. I just turned 78 yesterday.
Oh, there you go. Well, look at I can't run that fast anymore. So I'm just letting you know, because I've been attacked, chased out of town. You know, it's been an interesting life.
Yeah, I'll bet. No, I'm not being critical at all. I think, and thank you for the happy birthday salute. We have to do what we have to do. That's all. Yeah.
And how we do it.
That's right. I do it the way I'm doing it now, and it's very successful. And you are doing a really
amazing
thing.
Amazing.
I would like to do, but I can't right now. So there you go. Everybody has their thing, and we appreciate it. Anybody that can do anything to expose these people for the evil ways of what they're doing. That's what has to happen. That's what we got to do.
Absolutely. So and I think that as long as I don't censor you or gatekeep you, and you don't gatekeep me, then I'm fine with it.
We're just trying to encourage you, mainly.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I think that's, that helps. I'll convey that encouragement to Chris, and maybe that'll fire him up. But he's he's the guy that he did an excellent video. I wish I could find it. Maybe if I went silent for a while, I could find it, because he saw. I didn't realize it from the video, but he saw these guys going into the synagogue last week when I wasn't there. And a guy comes up to him and says, "Can you explain me these signs?" And he's like, he's trying to get Chris to engage in a conversation, but it's not really, he doesn't give a shit about engaging in a conversation. He wants to tell Chris how wrong he is. Mm-hmm. And Chris didn't bite. He said, "The signs are there. You can read them."
Oh, good for him.
Don't want to expand on it. And he said, no. And he said, don't you want to know, like, from my point of view? And Chris said, not really. it was really beautiful. I'm of the sort, it's my nature to, be willing to explain to anybody why we're there, what we're trying to do, and what each sign means. I can go through each one of them, anti-Semitism, always earned, never given. That kind of a thing. It's a takeoff on the Marine thing about their pride, always earned, never given. Let me go silent for a while. I'll try to find that.
Okay. We got other people we're going to be bringing in. So, if you want to jump back in, just let us know.
I'll mute myself now, and then I'll go.
Very good. All right, Diana, what do we got cooking? We got some people that want to come in. I don't know who's what.
Dewey Wise, the dancing.
Okay, so let's hear from Dewey Wise, the dancing Israeli. What do you have to say for us tonight?
Hello.
The stream's kind of glitchy right now, but hopefully everybody should hear me.
Perfectly.
Go ahead.
He said it was glitchy.
Suddenly the stream just started glitching.
Amazingly. Well,
you go ahead and speak, please.
Speak when you can.
All right. So how is everybody doing today?
Good, sir. How about you?
What do you got for us?
Doing well.
I don't know what's going on.
He wasn't kidding.
Okay. That was weird.
I don't know. I don't know if he's legit or if he's just giving us a hard time. So I don't know.
He kind of sounded like he was setting up a troll. That's what it sounded like.
That's interesting, Uncle Murray. Interesting observation.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody else in the room wants to come in the chat or what? Okay. His internet dropped. So it's not him. So he's got a problem with his internet. Which can happen.
Like he's coming back in.
Who else we got cooking to come in?
Yeah, he's coming back in.
Be back again.
Okay.
The glitch kicked me out.
Yep.
What you got?
I don't know what's going on. I'm saying I've been showing my family more Europa the Last Battle propaganda, and they seem to be getting more of the idea that Hitler was right and that the Jews.
He said, what, 10 words? And that was phenomenal. That was awesome.
Wow. Well, let me fill in the space before the dead air kills us, right? So, does everyone realize that our election infrastructure has been held hostage?
No.
Right? Think about this, right? Why does it cost a single cent to run an election? You could run an election with complete volunteers and have a successful campaign. What is it? Who is it that we have to pay to have these elections run? You know?
Really?
Do you know what it costs? You know what it costs for the president, a guy running for president, what he needs for funds to run an election campaign? $100 million.
That's right. And why?
Who has that kind of money?
Well, exactly. I got sitting right here in the back room.
Now print off another one of them 10s and 20s.
Can you imagine $100 million? And that's even if you lose. I mean, you're going to spend $100 million. It don't matter, you know?
Right.
Okay.
I see he's back in the room.
Okay. Do we want to bring that video in? I don't know how long it is and all that.
Which one?
Well, Henry put a link to a video. I just don't know how long it is.
Yeah, you better check that first.
We can't have too long of videos on.
No, not now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, anybody else into the room that want to talk?
I just put a great Vax video on the channel. It's actually going to be trending shortly.
All right, we'll get there. Let's look at this is a short video. So let's look at this video here. What's going on here? Oh, this is the guy that came up to Chris.
I don't have a pitch.
Okay, your views? You have views?
Sure.
You share your views?
It's pretty obvious if you just read my signs.
Can you turn it into a paragraph?
Why?
Thanks. I really wanted to hear it. Do you want me to talk?
No, I really don't. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You have respect your right not to talk.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Right. You curious about my views?
Not really.
Interesting.
It's America.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no bylaws. There's nothing that I'm breaking. There's nothing.
No, it's not the bylaws. I thought maybe you might be interested in discussing a dialogue.
No, Henry is into that. I just want to stand here. And Henry is the one you should talk to. He's been here 20 years. I've only been here 12.
Okay, what time does he come?
He'll be here next week. We're here every week.
I'm just visiting. Okay.
20 years.
Yeah, I'm just visiting. I'm not here. Okay, yep. Great.
I like that sign, no Holocaust movies. You got some good signs there, Henry. I like them. Those
Please
are good.
No more Holocaust movies.
Oh, those are good signs.
Yeah. We do it the best we can with what we got.
Yeah. That's good. Yes. I mean, you're definitely I wish more people would do what you are doing, Henry. But, you know, it takes a lot of balls to get out there to do that, you know, and I mean, it's cold. Look at, I used to do it. I used to be out doing, holding signs, dealing with illegal immigration. I actually never got into doing signs with Jew stuff because that didn't come until later after my immigration stuff. But, I mean, that was a pain in the ass doing that. And all the problem, oh boy. And that was just immigration. I can't even imagine. If I had signs about Jews, what they would have done to us. I mean, we got enough problems with the immigration stuff and being called a racist and a hater and all these things. And the Jews weren't even in the dialogue, the discussion. Can you imagine?
It's your First Amendment right to say anything you want about anything. Well, I mean, as long as you're not saying kill the Jews or.
Right.
You know,
I would never say that. I never
kill every immigrant that you see.
No,
or, you
know, In fact, you know, when people put on my BitChute channel, I try to keep up with it. If they say stuff like that, I delete them. I don't even want that stuff on my channel when people say that.
You know, I really respect that. I mean, and the frustrating thing, the position that we're in, is that, you know, that we engage in this hate speech or whatever, or incitement to hatred. Now, I have a big problem with that. Let's pretend for a minute that you were a pedophile at one point in your life. And when I pointed out that Jim Rizzoli was a pedophile, people started hating you. Yeah. Now, why should I be responsible if I'm telling the truth for the hatred that my truth generates? Right. So if I tell the truth about Jews and say Jews bomb hospitals and they say, oh, that's going to cause people to hate Jews. Well, A, maybe it should. And B, if telling the truth incites hatred, that should not be a crime. I just get befuddled by that legalistic twisting of of words, of phrases, of concepts. So we'll have to I guess we'll just cross that bridge or jump off that bridge when we get to it. But that's, I think that should be an issue that people should raise right now. This incitement to hatred. Am I inciting hatred to blacks when I say that George Floyd wasn't murdered, that right. he didn't die from, strangulation or suffocation, if that causes blacks to be, I just don't understand. I can't get my head around that. It seems like if you tell the truth, that should be a defense,
Right. The truth is the truth, brother. Right, he died from a heroin overdose, or whatever it was, a meth overdose, wasn't from strangulation.
Fentanyl, yeah.
And so, how could the guy be serving 40 years for murder when no murder was committed? I'm having a hard time getting around that. Same time as that shooter in Pittsburgh, Bowers gets the death penalty for killing 11 Jews. Another guy killed 23 Hispanics, and he gets life imprisonment. Where's the process in the sentence? I mean, the lesson to me is kill Jews, you're going down. Anybody else gets a pass. You're telling me I get a pass because I'm a Jew.
The problem I have with you, because they can't accuse you of being anti-Semite because technically you're a Semite.
They've created a phrase that I'm a self-hating Jew. That's what they say.
Okay, they can look at you. I know, but they can say that. But there's no law about being a self-hating Jew. But they're trying to make laws about anti-Semitism. There's a big difference.
When they do make a law against anti-Semitism, they will be coming for me. I can tell you that right now.
Well,
it'll be interesting. Maybe you're right. Maybe this will play out different.
Well, it would be a very interesting thing. Now, here's what I just give you something that I would do if I was you. I would go to your next city council meeting. With that temple, that's in the same locale, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would go to that meeting and just say, I would like to know why the police are coming in here when I'm doing this. Why, what's going on here? What are you guys doing? I mean, what's up here? So it's just kind of awkward that, in other words, why are you calling the police on me? You're supposed to be so open. The Jews are supposed to be so open and all these nice things about them, but yet you're calling the police because I'm protesting against you. What is going on there? Why are you harassing me? Like that. Just to kind of put them on the spot, because someone's doing it. Someone's calling in saying, there's somebody here doing this or whatever they're doing,
Oh, man, Jim. If I fart in public, they'll call the police. it's just really sick, everything they do. And that's why I don't want to be calling the police on all sorts of frivolous stuff.
About you calling the police. They're calling the police on you. And it's like, what's going on here? Why am I getting harassed? Yeah. See, that's harassment. They're harassing you. It's on record. You could show them or whatever. Talk about, I see the police car going into the yard. Why is this happening?
I don't know why they're doing it. It'll all work out in the end. And we will liberate Palestine and hopefully liberate America. From the same power. And I got to go now, but I will, I'll put it in my calendar for next week. Diane, you'll send me the link, and yes, and we will rock and roll.
Absolutely. Okay,
Henry. Have a great time, Henry.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Right, thanks for coming on. We'll see you next week. All right, take care. Okay, anybody else coming in? I've been having some tech stuff going on about Laurie wanted to come, but I haven't seen anything happen.
Any presence? Okay.
Okay. So John from Wilmington, John, welcome. What's going on?
Hello, Hoaxbusters. Hello, Jim.
Hi,
Diane.
Greetings, John.
Hello, Uncle Murray.
Uncle Murray's muted.
Oh, he's muted.
How you doing, John?
Okay. Yeah. Diane, applause. How are you? Hey, Henry left?
Hello, we're all here.
Henry left. Henry left.
We're here. Henry's gone.
I had a couple questions for him.
Oh.
That gentleman, the guy that's got life, or actually, he was put to, I guess they're going to execute him, Mr. Bowers, how does he spell his last name? Is it Bowers?
No telling.
The reason I ask, what was the Rothschilds' real name before they were called?
Bauer.
Yeah, Bauer or something like that.
Spelt different. Spelt different. Okay. And one of the reasons I heard that he went into that synagogue and was, shot the synagogue up was because they were big time supporters in the mass invasion of our country. They were really strongly supporting that, besides shutting him down from all the social medias. So, sorry to hear about that. Hey, Uncle Murray, I got a comment for you. Wednesday, I was watching the Giuseppe show, and he started it off with a song called "My Inner Nazi," and I did a BitChute search, and only one channel came up with that song, "My Inner Nazi," and guess whose channel that was?
Imagine that, huh? Imagine that, Goemzes.
It was yours. It was Kent.
Wow.
You got it, brother.
Yeah. Jim, I sent that to you yesterday, but it's a nice little.
Yeah, I think I get so many things, links you put up. It's hard for me to get to them all. I do try to look out one good one to put up. I always try to take something out of it to get it up if it's a really good one. But anyway, you have so many links you send me, it's hard to just keep up with it all.
But I
appreciate that though. I go through them. I look through them, and Diane and I were looking at one today. We're looking at, and I don't know, again, I put so many videos up, I don't know sometimes where I'm even getting them. So it's hard to keep track of where they're coming from.
Oh, you guys probably want to play that one later. I seen the one you put up today with Logos Sax was featured in it.
Yeah. I put that. Wait a minute. I got to see what I get up. I don't even know what I get up. I got to look at it.
Yeah, it was Name the Jew. It was one of them.
Yeah. Okay,
The name Ernie Rinaldo. So.
Right.
He's doing some good stuff. I watched a video of him, matter of fact, interviewing the young lady that's trying to come on here, Lori Kaufman.
Yeah, Lori. Yeah, I said we were open. If she wanted to come in, she could come in, but I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's all I got. I'm going to get out of here.
Okay. Guys, very good.
Good work.
All right.
Have a good night, brother.
All right. Thanks. All right.
Come on. Uncle Murray.
Yeah. All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so anybody else in the green room that...
Does anyone hear from Donald Trump? There's nobody else on the list? Oh, I see. Oh, a parody.
It's a parody.
Oh,
let's watch parodies. That. I like parodies.
Yeah, you do.
I am proud to be partnering with some country music star who I will call my good friend to present the Buy My Shit Bible. It contains the King James Bible because my marketing team told me that was the most popular translation, along with the Constitution, Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, because I have to pretend to care about these things to get you to buy my shit. Speaking of buying my shit, I am probably the least religious president since Nixon, but I am here to tell you about how the Bible is my favorite book, both to sell this and to overcompensate and score brownie points with the religious right. Our founding fathers did a tremendous thing when they built this country on Enlightenment liberal AR. Excuse me, I mean Judeo-Christian values. Now that is under attack more than ever. And by the way, vote for me. We must make America pray again. And in light of that, I would like you to join me in prayer. Blessed are the Pharisees, thou shalt commit adultery, AR. It is easier for a camel to jump through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. No, the prosperity gospel crowd will be pissed if I do that kind of prayer. Buy my Trump Bible. It is a hell of a deal. Jesus Christ, what are you waiting for?
Okie dokie. All right. All right, hold on here. Let me just see what's going on here. If we get anybody coming in. I don't know.
Well, there was a Stoltz person.
Okay, Laurie said she needs a link to call in. I don't know what's going on there. She said she, if you want to.
I sent it to her about 2 weeks ago. But I'll send it.
That's a little. It's
different. Yeah, it's different. I'll send it to her.
Okay. Let me hold on. What are we looking at here now? We're looking at something here.
It's incredible that in the 34 years since the internet was rolled out, how the minds of the nation have been shifted. Truth sounds like hate to those who hate truth. To begin with, our Declaration of Independence, which those who have never seriously studied history are taught to reject, stated that our rights come from nature and nature's God. There are objective truths and there is objective morality. An objective truth is something that is true for all time, for all men, and in all circumstances. The simple fact is you are born as a boy or girl, no matter what delusions one may harbor. There is no vote, there is no law, there is no judge that can change these immutable laws. Additionally, there are many Americans who have detransitioned. Their voices are not being heard. I urge the critical thinkers to recognize the appeal to antidote logical fallacies and to focus on the lessons of history. Time tells all tales. This is a concerted agenda, and reading Judith Reisman's Sexual Sabotage helps to reveal how it was unleashed on America, beginning with the 1948 Kinsey Report. Amazing, that was the same year that Mao was set up as a puppet over China and Israel came into existence, and all three events had the same tribe behind it. When you study the Supreme Court, 1965 was Griswold versus Connecticut, which legalized birth control. 1969 was Stanley versus Georgia, which legalized pornography. 1973 was Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion. 2003 was Lawrence versus Texas, which legalized homosexuality. 2015 was Obergefell versus Hodges, which legalized homosexual marriage. And none of those are legitimate in God's eyes, and they will be overturned. So how history views all of us is going to depend on who has the courage, which is the definition is having the ability to stand for what is unpopular at times when adversity makes it extremely difficult to do so. It's going to take those who have that kind of courage to allow this truth to prevail, and so that good will prevail and evil will once more find its place.
Thank you for your comments. Alexandra, then Case.
All right, that was Ryan Massano, and he's like Henry. He goes to the meetings, city council meetings in Sacramento, I believe.
Yeah.
And he just tells the truth. Now, he usually gets kicked out or they stop him because if he brings up the word Jew, they kick them out.
They go crazy.
When they hear Jew, oh my goodness, it's like the vampire and the garlic and the cross.
Their hair flames.
Yeah, right. So anyway, that's good old Ryan. He's a good guy. Yeah. He's doing the best he can. Okay, is there anybody else coming in?
Yeah, two people sounds like.
We got some people coming in or what?
Supposed to.
Cool. But Ryan's doing a great job at the city councils. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So tell him
super duper. See, this is what we got to do. We got to get people like him doing little things all across the country so it becomes a big thing. See, you know, little thing here, little thing there. It adds up, and then all of a sudden people start taking notice. But if no one says anything, then nothing. No one's going to hear. Like Henry, he's there every week, every weekend doing his thing, protesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a pebble in the shoe of somebody.
That's right. That's right.
He's irritating these people. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want to do. You want to get these people to see what the hell's going on.
That's how we win. That's right.
Well, you know, it's not even winning. It's the fact is that's our job. Our job is to do what we're supposed to do. Whatever happens, happens. Nothing we can do about it. You know, it's just like I had somebody on my BitChute channel give me a thing saying, well, you know, Hitler, he's responsible for the killing of millions and millions of Germans. If it wasn't for Hitler, these Germans wouldn't have been killed. And I'm saying to myself, what are you talking about? Hitler had an issue. He had a problem. And he's trying to deal with the problem. Whatever happened, happened. There's nothing he can do, you know? All right. So anyway,
Lori's trying to get in, but apparently I don't know if there's a waiting list or if, one of us has to go. I don't know what the deal is.
There shouldn't be any problem her coming in.
I wouldn't think so, but, I've just been getting messages from Bob.
Oh, all right. Well, whatever. I don't know what, again, we have no control how this
goes. No, that we're not at the helm. So
I don't know. I'm just seeing the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess, we're going to move on. I put some good videos up here. We're not going to play these long ones. No doubt about it.
No, absolutely not.
I put some funny videos up to, let's see.
Hey, Jim, I love that Lipstadt video. The Lipstadt video is gold, guys. If you haven't seen the Lipstadt video, it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, here's one that was really good. Shot video. This had to do, because we've been talking. I did a video right before this. It's 20 minutes. We're not too much to play. But this one here, let's play this one here, the body cremation time. This is very critical, for people to understand how long it takes to do a cremation. This was in a movie, series or whatever.
Gentlemen, I fear this is for double occupancy.
I think he got that box from Walmart or Costco.
Yeah. Now notice the time on his watch. Watch what happens.
Needs to be about 2,000. Well,
yeah, it's about 2,000 degrees.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Quarter ten.
Yep.
And he's doing a cremation, and it's quarter one.
Boom.
3 hours. So there you go.
Suppose he's done?
Yeah, 3 hours. Just one body, 3 hours for a cremation. And again, the Jews want you to think you can cremate a body in like about 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or some complete nonsense. You know what I mean? But this is how they create their Holocaust narrative lie by saying that people can be cremated in 15 minutes or a half hour.
Yeah.
Never could happen.
I have a feeling
that's the easy bake theory. That's the easy bake oven theory. Bake oven theory of the Holocaust.
I bet you a lot of young people won't even remember easy bake oven. You know?
No, that was in my day.
Yeah. Okay.
That was good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here.
Name the Jew. That's 5 minutes. Is that okay?
Well, we could play that. I mean, it's 5 minutes. So I don't mind 5 minute video.
Okay.
Rents. This is from Rents.
The absolute worst thing for the Jews is the great noticing it has begun. Naming the Jews is growing. People no longer fear pointing to universal Jewish mischief and menace. What's brought this about is Israel's latest off the chain mad dog treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. It's not the first time the Jews have gone full on commando on the helpless, dispossessed, and mistreated Palestinians in what was once their homeland. The world is watching Jewish ruthlessness and only has words to defend the Palestinian mothers and children who are being butchered by the Jews. World leaders have held their noses and looked the other way. They're bought, bribed, blackmailed, and too intimidated to address the genocide happening in Gaza. The two worst culprits holding a nation captive are the American Anti-Defamation League and American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Both work for Israel and Jewish interests as attack dogs. In view of ordinary people's disgust at what Israel is currently doing, all we have left is to name the Jews at every turn, whether in Israel or in the worldwide Jewish diaspora, to name them and shame them, to notice what they're once again doing to the civilization and holding them to collectively account, thus putting their leaders under pressure to conform to civilized behavior if they wish to live amongst the nations. History has shown it goes badly for the Jews when the non-Jews have had enough of Jewish abuse. Following is an excerpt from Zach at Logos Revealed. You'll find him on Odyssey at Logos Revealed. The following is an excerpt from a 12-hour marathon of Jewish treachery that is destroying the West. The excerpt is about losing the fear to name the Jew as a means of defending the civilization. Call them out. Name the Jew.
So, now we know. Jews come in. They change their names. They act as spies within your country. Okay, they buy up your media apparatus and convince you what they want you to hear. Okay, they tell you the news they would like you to know. They don't tell you anything beyond that. They now make Hollywood, okay, and now they make shows where not only do they mock you on these shows, they also try to convince you of things that are anti-theatrical to your culture. For instance, transgenderism with Jazz Jennings. They push that kind of smut on television and try to convince you that you should let your child become a transgender and cut their scrotum off. Okay. This is extremely subversive. Okay. So now what do they do next? They control your news. They control your entertainment. Next thing they go for is the internet. Okay. And this isn't just the internet, but they do it everywhere. Now, when their narrative is being pushed and people start to disagree and put out opposing narratives, it's the next thing they do. Censorship. This is where they come in. They put the tyrannical hammer down and say, that's violent speech. No, you can't say that. That's hate speech. No, no, no. That's wrong. You're wrong. You're crazy. Oh, God, anti-Semitic. You see what he's saying? Oh, my goodness. Okay? This is what they do. So much so, to an extent, that you have people who are literally scared to say the word Jew to describe the group of people that is doing what is being done. Okay? Great example is, what's her face? We were just watching the interview. Maria Farmer, the one who was a victim of the Epstein Island. She's like, dude, they won't let you in because that country club is like all Jews, right? And then she says something else, and then the interviewer woman goes, so they're not letting you in because that place is only allowed for a specified group of people. And the lady cuts it. She goes, no, Jews. Jews. The other woman is so programmed, she's so afraid of societal pressure, that societal backlash, that she won't even, recognizing it and hearing the problem, won't even repeat it because she's so scared of what that word might bring her in her social life. Okay? You understand? This is a fear that has to be broken down. Everywhere, okay? In yourself, in your family, in the news, in the country. People need to stop being afraid to say the fucking word Jew. Mm-hmm. The fact that cancel culture works is so astonishing to me. It really is, okay? 10 years ago, people were saying whatever the fuck they want, wherever the fuck they want, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, everybody's walking on psychological eggshells. And you don't understand what kind of a tyranny this is. This is a tyranny that is so much worse than a dictatorship tyranny where there's this evil guy and if you do something they don't like, they're going to kill you, all right? Because this tyranny that we're experiencing, this is a psychological one. It puts you on a psychological leash where you censor your own thoughts and own actions in fear of societal backlash.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. I mean, it's exact. You know, if you people that are out there, I don't really associate with any people. I'm not out about anymore. But if you're in a conversation and you just bring up Jew, people just go, their eyes glass over and it's like, oh, don't say that. Don't say Jew. It's incredible. That word Jew, you know, is incredible, you know, horrible. All right. Anybody else wanted to try to come into our green room here? Anybody? I don't know what happened to Laurie. She was having problems getting in, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and Bob had wanted us to just call her and see if we can do an audio. I can't do that. I can't do that from here. It wouldn't be a very good recording. No.
Well, it's not. It's tough doing a thing when on the phone.
Audio, yeah. You that know. Way, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, anyway. Okay. I guess there's nobody else there to bring in. So okay, moving on. Well, let's get Uncle Murray. What do you got for us?
Hey, so I found out over the past couple of days, a bunch of women have been assaulted by men randomly, and this is the breakdown of society that we've all been warning about. You know, we had a high trust society, and in a high trust society, women don't worry about getting punched in the face for absolutely no reason. But now it's happening. Why? It's because now we have low trust individuals walking around our high trust society without signs on them. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. If I want to just go back to my videos, if you want, I want to just show again. I put so many videos up. I don't even know what's going on anymore. There's a lot of them. E. Michael Jones. Okay. Now that's too long to play, but the reason why I brought this video in, and Diane and I have been talking about this all week here, is because E. Michael Jones, he actually, in the beginning of this video, brought me into the conversation. And when someone brings me into their conversation, then I get into their conversation, okay? I will make a video, or I will talk about them, and I walk and talk, so that's what I do. And, E. Michael Jones, he's great on the juice stuff. He's really good, but he's just a fanatical, crazy Catholic. All right, what can I say? And he really feels that the Catholic Church, we all got to become Catholic. We all got to get baptized as Catholics. All right, to come into God's way. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's the problem I have with E. Michael Jones. I agree with him. He's great on the moral issues. He's great on the Jew issues, but he's not good on the two things here. One, he's anti-Hitler. He doesn't understand about Hitler. He thinks Hitler was trying to get rid of all the Jews. No, that wasn't the, no, not Jews, Catholics. What am I saying? The Catholics. He thinks that, the priests were put in Dachau and they were put there because they were Catholic and they were, coming against Hitler. Well, yeah, they were coming against Hitler. Okay. But they shouldn't have been doing that. All right. And, I just don't think he understands what's going on here. So he's good in a lot of things. That's why I put his videos up. But he's not good in regards to, first of all, pushing his whole Catholic nonsense that the Catholic Church is God's church. Peter was the first pope. And I have addressed him with a lot of things. I had Barbara gave us a nice little meme that had a whole bunch of things to ask a Catholic. How do they prove these things? Now, I don't know if you have the meme. Where's Diane? Did she go somewhere? She left. All right. Well, anyway, so the memes had all these points of what the Catholic Church taught. And my question that I wanted to have a discussion with E. Michael Jones is, show me biblical where these things were true. And he never responded. Okay. That's the situation. Okay. Not Lentz. Yeah. The Catholic priest in Dhaka was named Lentz. And E. Michael Jones, he just thinks he's the saint. He really thinks that this Lentz guy was in the camp because he was Catholic, doing Catholic stuff. And he wasn't. He was in the camp because most likely he was probably involved with some type of activity that was going against the Germans. Okay? Treasonous, whatever you want to call it. Sedition. I would say sedition, you know.
He can't put the words Catholic and subversion in the same sentence.
Right, right.
Which is weird.
Yes, that's the problem. And so he wants us to think that Lentz was a good Catholic being persecuted because he was Catholic. Folks, Hitler allowed the Catholics to practice their religion. Most of the German soldiers are probably Catholic. They were able to function just fine. So if Lenz was in prison, what would you deduce by this? You would say he must have did something wrong to be in prison. Okay? He wouldn't have just put him in prison for no reason. And then they make a big deal about, oh, well, Jim doesn't have any facts to show that. What facts do I need? You're in prison. Okay? You're in
but
prison.
That isn't true. We sent him numerous bits of information that he just totally rejected, including the meme list that Barbara had sent. You sent that to E. Michael Jones, and he says, what are you, Pope now? Like you're challenging him. Well, you are challenging him. None of his contentions are scriptural.
Yeah, it's horrible. So that's my issue with E. Michael Jones. I like him. I'll continue to put his videos up. I'll continue to give him the credit when credit's due. But I am not going to give him credit for the nonsense that the, you know, he wants us to believe that we all got to be Catholic and the Catholic Church is God's chosen people today. Really, that's what he believes. He pushes out the Jews as God's chosen people, rightly so, but then he replaces them with the Catholics. And it's like the Catholics have nothing to do with anything here. Okay. So then people get on me and say, oh, you hate Catholics. No. I don't hate Catholics. I hate the church that they belong to because the church they belong to is anti-Bible, anti-God. Well, I don't know if I can't say anti-God, but the things that they believe are anti-God, honestly. That's what they really are. So, you know, I do the best I can to try to expose the lies or you know, people bringing stuff up that isn't true. I try the best I can to do that. But if people want to believe nonsense, they can believe nonsense. And I feel E. Michael Jones, a very smart man. I mean, really. I mean, I've never seen anybody that has the knowledge that he has on a lot of different subjects. But his knowledge on Hitler is just not good. Not good at all. Okay? All right. So, Miss Diane, what's going on with you? You playing with the cat or something?
No, I'm not playing with her. I'm trying to comfort her.
Oh, she's got a problem?
She's been ailing this whole past 2 hours. In regard to when one of E. Michael Jones programs, and he brought up the issue of Hitler at the very beginning. He says, let's go see what there's written about Hitler. And he Googles it like that. He Googles it. And so as if that's going to provide him with the precise information, but that's okay. He doesn't mind getting, because it supports what the propaganda he's received. What I call the Michael Hoffman version of Hitler.
Well, the problem is he uses the Jews' information for learning about Hitler. I mean, well, are you out of your mind? I mean, they are not going to say anything good about him. So why would you use that? You have to get into other sources, which, again, we have other sources that tell the truth about all these things. And we have sent E. Michael Jones all this information. I mean, don't think we haven't, but then he says we don't have facts. And I'm saying, what the hell? We got plenty of facts. You just don't want to use them or you don't want to believe them. The facts we're showing you, you don't want to believe. I don't know what to tell you. Crazy, you know, crazy stuff. All right. So anyway, that's my video with E. Michael Jones. I'll continue to put him up. But he's not happy with us. There's no doubt about it. There's, you know, he doesn't like the fact that we come against him, and all that. Okay. This video here, oh, the free speech hurts people's feelings. This is an interesting video. It's only a short video, but the point is, what's going on in the black community with hate. Okay, look, I don't like people coming against blacks and calling them niggas and all this and that. Believe me, that to me, that's not good. You know what I mean? Why would you do something like that? But people do it. People say these very hurtful things. Hey, look, people call me a lot of names, you know, but it is what it is. But for some reason, when it happens to the black people, they get kind of upset. And I can understand why they get upset. But don't make this an issue that you want to put us in jail, or the guys that do this. Again, people that do this, I can't speak for them. I don't agree with them. But you want to put them in jail because they call someone a nigger? I mean, really? It's free speech. You can say what you want about anybody. But it's funny how the Jews can call us every name in the book, but you know, people can't say anything about anybody else and complain or say whatever they want to say. So it's really coming to a point that our speech is going to get us in jail. That's what's going to happen.
That's the plan anyway.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And again, there's a lot of good black people that agree with us, you know, that understand what's going on about the Jew. They do. They say it. And that's why we have to, you know, we don't want to alienate anybody. Anybody that understands the Jew, we really have to gravitate towards and try to say, okay, we're with you on that. And that's what we got to do. I don't know. It is what it is, you know. This other one, another one below this, Senate bill to show your license to post. Now, this is a very controversial situation here because some people think that you should show you're over 18 to be able to post on any of these sites on the internet. But then on the other hand, now it's like registering. You know, you got to register to talk, to give your opinion. And I don't know. I it's always good to get other people's opinion. What do they think about this? What do you think about it, Uncle Barry? What do you think? Do you have a comment?
What? Yeah, so the voter ID thing. Well, it turns out a bunch of countries actually use voter ID, and they're very successful because mail-in voting, for the most part, does nothing but facilitate fraud. That's been proven all over the world, even in Mexico, right? So-called third world country.
This is a different aspect, though. This is registering to lodge your opinion about something. Yeah, and you have to prove your age, that you have a right to express your opinion because you're over 18.
Yeah, this is some kind of end run around to get people's identities. Yeah,
it's supposed to protect the kids. Well, that's what they were saying about other things, that pornography, you know, be policing pornography. Yeah, right. The politicians are going to police pornography and all these child marketers, and to protect the kids, of course.
Yeah.
It's always for the children.
It's an end run. There's no doubt about it. Okay. It's an end run. They want you to have another view of it. They want you to think they're doing something good. But really, that's all you want to do is eventually be able to come after you and identify you to say, you said this, you said that, and, you know, ban you here or whatever they want to do. I think it's bad. It's not a good situation, you know. Even though it does bother me that people, you don't know who they are on the internet, especially on the BitChute. People don't give the real names. I give my real name. I'm not ashamed to put my real name up. But other people, I understand. They feel if they put their real name up and get their information out, that they're going to be doxxed. People are going to come after them. They might lose their job. And that's all true, folks. Believe me. But look at that's the chance you have to take when you give an opinion on the internet. That's just the way it is. If they want to find you, they're going to find you. Let me just tell you that right now. Even if,
exactly.
if you're saying something that they don't like, it, they're going to come after you. They'll get into the servers. They'll find out by getting warrants or whatever. Really, I'm telling you, that's what they will do. They'll find out who you are, and they'll track you down. If you think,
About it, guys. For not saying what you needed to say before, now you're gonna have to say a lot meaner stuff now.
Right.
So you know.
Yeah, it's a problem. Again, we're just gonna have to see how that works. Going on and on. You know. All right.
Did you hear about Lizzo? Lizzo quit the business, the entertainment business, because she was getting mocked too much.
Oh, I did see something like that today. Yeah, I really don't know much about it. I guess she's a real big hefty girl or something.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She's
a sacrificial lamb. See, they threw her out there to gather sympathy because she played. She got selected to play the stage for Tater Tot, Joe Biden, and they booed. Of course, everyone's booing this freak, right? And his whole administration. And she happens to be there trying to so-called entertain. And then she realized, oh, I shouldn't be here. So
yeah.
She quit the business after getting browbeat for all that.
So they used her, threw her under the bus, and then she saw what the hell they were doing.
You got it.
Yeah. And of course, look what happened with Candace Owens. You know, she was really, I never could understand how she got involved with Ben Shapiro. I'm saying, what the hell is she doing? Why would she want to go on that guy's platform and the talk? And then she gets on the platform, and then she finds out, I guess she had a little confrontation with some Jew fellow, and he wrote an article about her, and she it wasn't too complimentary. He was calling her anti-Semite and all this, and she got pissed. He's like, "What are you doing, calling me anti-Semite?" Blah blah blah. So I guess, long story short, I think she was fired, but I don't know. She might say, her side of it might say she quit, but she was probably fired because she said stuff against the Jews, which again
she got fired. Yeah, they just massaged the whole thing. So exit, But she got fired because she said Christ is king. Christ is king. Sorry.
Right. So she stood her ground. But it's going to be interesting to see, how far she goes with this, because to really be red pill, you got to understand the whole situation with the Jews. I don't think she's at that point yet. But she's married to a millionaire, multimillionaire. I don't think she has to worry about money, So whatever. Of course, you guys really believe her. I don't care to believe her or not. Whatever happens with her happens. You know what I mean? I think the whole thing is drama, myself. Because remember, who's it bringing attention to? The ultimate result is it's bringing attention to anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism has to do with the Jews. You understand? So the Jews, even if you make them look bad or criticize them, it don't matter, because whatever criticism is, the Jews use whatever they can use against you, because they get you both ways, okay? If you're an anti-Semite, they get you. If you have a compliment about them, well, that's great, right? They love that. See, so they got you on both ends. You compliment them, they don't bother you. You criticize them, then they come after you. This is the situation, how the Jews work. They're able to burn the candle from both ends and get what they want. And of course, if you don't go along with them, then we got a problem there. So anyway, do we have is this going to be an ending video for our show tonight? I think it is. So, folks, we want to thank you for watching. Here's a video. I'm not sure what it really is. So it's going to take us up right to the end. So we're going to play this video, but we want to thank everybody for calling in, being on the show. Appreciate all the comments. So let's see what the video has to say. It's going to take us right out, okay?
Have a good night, guys.
All right. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Jews day and night must scramble for a victim. Gotta hunt the goyim, gotta suck their souls. And we are the chosen, we can do no wrong. And we are Yahweh's favorite ones. Tradition, tradition. Tradition, tradition, tradition. Who must write the goyim children in their homes? The Jewish know, the Jewish know. And never was a rabbi held accountable. They all got paid off and they all shut up. The goyim, the goyim. Tradition, the goyim, the goyim. Tradition. At three they started Hebrew school, at ten they learned to hate. I hear they found a goyim boy and drowned him in the lake. Blood libel, blood libel. Tradition, blood libel. Are our slaves, from them we all get paid. We like to take their shiksas and rape them night and day. Tradition, 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 tradition. Kill the goyim, kill the goyim, kill the goyim, kill the goyim.
Gregorian, we've enslaved you for thousands of years. We don't think you have souls. And Yahweh told us you're worse than beasts. And because we want to please Yahweh, we will do whatever we can to stay on top. Even if that includes genociding the white race. That's right, you filthy anti-Semites.
All righty. Okay, folks. Well, that's the show for tonight. We'll see you next week. And that's it. Take care. Bye now.